destroy and take over Syria. Now EU leaders are being urged to show some compassion and solidarity.
Finally, take political responsibility to break the deadlock in the Council and to agree on a common European asylum system.
However, rights groups say that is wishful thinking. Anti-refugee politicians such as Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban have the power to veto any proposals that are presented here. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The global call for reparations is growing louder by the day as news emerges that Jamaica's government is set to demand reparations from Queen Elizabeth II and the British government for Great Britain's role in the transatlantic slave trade. A petition has been prepared and will be submitted in due course, according to Olivia Bazby-Grange, Jamaica's Minister for Culture. The announcement comes not long after UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet urged global action, including reparations, to, quote, make amends to people of African descent.
And of course, it's long, long, long overdue. And I like the way that the Jamaican representatives have phrased it. They have said, quite frankly, that if we're prepared, or if Britain is prepared to repay the enslavers or the descendants of the enslavers up until, just a few years ago, yeah, then they must equally be prepared to repay the descendants of the enslaved.
Over 3 million enslaved Africans were forcibly trafficked across the world by the British Empire to their colonies, including Jamaica, to work on plantations while being habitually brutalised and dehumanised. Yet for this heinous crime, the British state has never formally apologised, let alone taken steps to ensure reparatory justice.
Meanwhile, when slavery ended, the UK government borrowed £20 million from the Treasury to compensate slave owners for the inconvenience of not having enslaved Africans to make them rich. The loan was one of the largest in British history, which was equivalent to £17 billion today, and was at the time 40% of the UK's national budget. Yet according to the Daily Express newspaper based in the UK, 97% of their readers polled voted no to the question of whether Britain should pay reparations.
If you speak to the average Briton who doesn't know the true history of Britain, they're proud of empire. They think empire is something good. So the idea that they must, make payment for their ill deeds, their wrongful deeds, that doesn't even occur to them.
Britain is not going to apologise because there is no compulsion to apologise. That's what we're dealing with. Reparations is ultimately about power, okay? It's not about right or wrong or what's just or unjust. It's about who has the power to enforce their will.
Jamaica is a small island nation with a population of just under 3 million that still has the British Queen as its unelected head of state. And while many people of African descent will welcome their latest demand for reparations, others will feel that it will take a lot more than a petition to get the British state to finally accept responsibility for their historic crimes. Ahmed Kabbalah, London.
A Muslim woman from Birmingham is considering legal action against West Midlands police after allegedly being arrested while chanting in support of Palestine on Tuesday. The story went viral on social media after footage of the arrest was shared by Palestine Action, who were staging a separate stunt opposite where the woman was cuffed.
Under what power are you taking her away? She was just standing on the street.
Three officers decided to come my way and start asking me to basically stop chanting. And then I challenged them and asked them, it's my right to chant. I'm outside the building. I'm not doing anything wrong. And they refused. They said, well, if you carry on chanting, then we will arrest you. And I said, well, what law have I broken? On what grounds? And they had no answer again. They were becoming very agitated, and I was speaking very calmly. And to my shock, one of the officers just grabbed my hand and handcuffed my wrist without any warning whatsoever. They were ignoring me, and then when I asked them how long are you going to keep me, in custody for, their reply was basically until the activists on the roof get down and when it's all over.
Where contacted the police for comment. They claimed she was arrested to prevent a breach of the peace and only de-arrested her after she was pressured to not return to the scene.
This story highlights the growth in tension between the state and pro-Palestine activism. Could we be witnessing the beginning of a British total ban on support for the Palestinian cause? The answer to that question could come if this activist decides to fight a battle in the courts. Robert Carter, Birmingham.
Near Beirut International Airport, the first thing that one would notice is the long queues of cars, which begin from the early hours of the morning. Police try to assist the station workers in organizing the lineup of all types of vehicles, which come to one of the few gas stations in Beirut which allow them to fill their tanks completely. People here are already fed up.
It doesn't get worse than this. I have a cab. I need to fill gas. I've been going around the entire city trying to find gas. I won't even mention the lack of medicine and food.
We are going to hell. They are humiliating us and leaving us with nothing. It is the politicians who are dependent on the West. They and the West are destroying this country.
Member of the gas station owner's syndicate tells Press TV the crisis is far from over.
The story of the fuel crisis begins with the governor of the central bank. If there is money, then he will allot funds. If he wants to humiliate people, then he uses his bureaucratic procrastination. While in such an economic crisis, they can work on providing the necessary funds in one day instead of 6, 7, or 9 days. One day of delay will cause delay in distribution.
Others believe there should be free commerce when it comes to importing fuel, and allowing anyone in Lebanon to import fuel and break the cartel's monopoly. The latest crisis does not stop there. Mohammed Qasim was a public high school teacher for some 40 years. Today, his pension is worth only 10% what it used to be.
I used to have $2,000 to $2,500 per month. Now I'm gaining only $200. So how can I manage? This is one thing. $200 with what? Inflation, no food, no electricity, no fuel. Money is spent all over things other than social welfare. The government is not caring for people who are of low wages.
With so many unanswered questions and a complex socio-political and economic crisis, experts warn a possible Western intervention could worsen the situation.
Now they are trying to use the needs of the Lebanese in order to attract their emotions and passion towards these interventions. But I think this will not go on. None will accept that, and those who will accept that will pay for that nationally, and later will discover that he was making a betrayal to the country and to the history of the resistance that had liberated Lebanon.
Observers see prospects of civil unrest ahead, especially in light of the state's incapability of dealing with basic issues and the lack of agreement on a new cabinet. The Lebanese people have reached a state of anger and frustration, lining up for hours to fill their gas tanks. At times, this anger spills into fistfights and shootings. These incidents warn of the possibility of unrest and, as the caretaker prime minister put it, social explosion. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Despite a well-documented history of assassinations and the betrayal of Iran in favor of Saddam Hussein's Iraq, the terrorist group known as the Mujahideen e-Khalq, or MKO, has long received both overt and covert support from the U.S. government.
I was witness to a massive MEK rally outside the U.S. State Department in Washington, D.C. Maryam Rajavi, the wife of MEK founder Masoud Rajavi, who was boasting about resistance cells inside Iran causing destabilization and riots. There were numerous former congressional officials and U.S. diplomats on stage.
A 2012 report by NBC News affirmed that the group was responsible for the assassination of five Iranian scientists. Senior U.S. intelligence officials who spoke with Seymour Hersh in 2012 went a step further, telling the legendary journalist that the murderous plots were carried out by the terrorist group, quote, through liaison with the Israelis, but the United States is now providing the intelligence. A special operations advisor told him, quote, everything being done inside Iran now is being done with surrogates.
It is well documented that Rudy Giuliani was paid substantial sums, tens of thousands of dollars per speech, to sing the praises of the MEK and advance their regime change agenda. The same with John Bolton, who appeared in, I believe, 2017 at an MEK conference and pledged that I will see you in Tehran next year.
We here will celebrate in Tehran. Thank you very much.
Important U.S. journalists aren't the only ones blowing the whistle on American support for this dangerous terrorist organization. Even mainstream media corporate outlets and think tanks have been reacting with increasing alarm to Washington's continued insistence on backing the group. And now, under the Biden administration, it remains to be seen if there's any real chance of putting an end to this twisted relationship anytime soon. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
Highlighting the low capability of NATO troops to bring calm to Afghanistan, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson recently has said that NATO must be realistic about the issue. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson also said it would take combined efforts of many nations, including Afghanistan's neighbors, to help the Afghan people to build their future. This comes as the White House recently welcomed Iran's move to host the first round of intra-Afghan talks in Tehran. The recent remarks by the UK Prime Minister highlight an Afghan proverb saying only neighbors remain for each other, not others. Afghan officials have also realized that the best way to bring calm to Afghanistan is to boost the ties between neighboring countries and the entire region.
This is a true illustration of our conviction that Afghanistan is an integral part of Central Asia and that we have common challenges and collective responsibility to work together to address them.
As a matter of fact, most of Afghanistan's neighboring countries have so far played a key role in bringing peace to the war-ravaged country, excluding Pakistan. This is because Afghan officials have always blamed Islamabad for destabilizing Afghanistan by backing terrorism.
Pakistan is not only after the revival of Taliban regime, but it also follows other goals by backing terrorism, including creating border tensions and competing with India in our soil.
A total of 457 British service members have died in Afghanistan since the UK's deployment. The number is a much higher death rate compared to the UK involvement in Iraq. Britain's last combat troop left Afghanistan in October 2014, though about 700 remained in Afghanistan as part of a NATO mission to train Afghan forces. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Former members who have escaped this group describe it as a bloodthirsty cult that's involved in torture, forced sterilization, imprisonment, separating children from their parents. So should the EU not add this organization to its terrorist list?
So if the agreement is made among the member states by unanimity, then the entity, organization, or the individual is put on the either terrorist or sanctions list, and then the member states are responsible for enforcing the restrictive measures against this entity or individual.
The MKO is staging its annual conference in Paris, and previously some high-profile names from the US have been involved. The main goal of the terror group is to overthrow Iran's democratically elected government. Over the years, the MKO has killed more than 12,000 Iranian civilians and officials.
United States, they just support any group who can achieve its goals on the region. In the region, even it is the devils itself, they will support it to get to achieve the goals in the region.
MKO headquarters are in Albania. When respected international journalists attempt to access the secretive compound, they are accused of being Iranian government agents. Security experts say the terror group is mainly propped up by the US, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. Efforts by some Western countries and their regional allies to topple the Islamic Republic have been acknowledged by EU lawmakers in the past.
Europe does need to put its arm around Iran and be more welcoming.
We must work for stability in Iran and Iraq and Lebanon, a peace in Syria and Yemen, and oppose the US-Saudi attempts to isolate Iran.
Although the EU as a whole will never put the MKO on its terrorist list due to pressure from the US and others, it's well known that a number of the bloc's nations consider the organisation to be a malign entity. Furthermore, because the MKO has such bizarre ideas and restrictions around human reproduction, analysts say it is simply a matter of time before the organisation meets its demise. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning, Mom.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, please. Place me among thy troops are the victors, and place me in thy party, for thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among thy friends, for thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, it appears that more and more some Western politicians are showing their true colors. Some former and current high-ranking officials have come out and are openly supporting terrorism against an independent country, Iran. The Mujahideen Haq terror organization has killed at least 12,000 Iranians, but that doesn't seem to matter, as the goal for these MKO supporters seem to be increased pressure on regular Iranians, as well as overthrowing the Islamic establishment in Tehran and supporting any entity willing to try to do that, even terrorists. So the question is it just the MEK with blood on its hands, or are these Western countries also complicit in the mass murder of Iranians?
The annual meeting of the MKO terrorist group being hosted by Albania. Due to the coronavirus, the meeting is both virtual and face-to-face. Every year, the event brings together delegates paid by the terror group. This year, several high-profile Western politicians, including Slovenian Prime Minister Janez Janša, a number of U.S. lawmakers, as well as former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, are among invitees.
The program of sanctions and pressure employed by the Trump administration needs to remain the model for engagement with Iran if we want to ensure the security of the American people and better lives for the Iranian people. In Washington, D.C., there is much consensus, as evidenced by the overwhelming support for the sanctions regime that we put into place.
Tehran has slammed the Western countries for supporting the group. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said the MKO is a terrorist cult having the blood of Iranian people on its hands. Said Khatibzadeh denounced Western politicians, including Pompeo, for, quote, selling themselves to the Europe-hosted circus. He also accused the West of a shameful hypocrisy driven by insatiable thirst for money and anti-Iran obsession. Iran has also summoned Slovenia's ambassador in Tehran to strongly protest against the participation of the country's premier in the meeting. The ministry said supporting a terrorist group violates the UN Charter and international norms. The Mujahideen Khalq organization was founded in the 1960s. The group started the blind assassination campaign of Iranian citizens and officials after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. They also conducted dozens of bombings across the country. Out of the nearly 17,000 Iranians killed in different terrorist attacks over the past four decades, about 12,000 of them have fallen victim to the MKO. During a war launched against Iran by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, the 1980s, MKO members were armed by the then Iraqi regime to fight alongside Ba'athist forces against the Islamic Republic. Despite all the crimes committed by the MKO, it's not currently listed by any Western country as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the US, that often claim to be anti-terrorism, rather removed the MKO from their list of terror organizations in 2009 and 2012, respectively. Ever since, the West has changed its stance toward the MKO, propagating it not only as an Iranian opposition group, but misses no chance to fund the group and lobby in its favor by putting a blind eye to how the MKO spilled the blood of innocent people. This exposes the West's double standards when it comes to terrorist organizations.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to this program out of London, Dr. Marcus Papadopoulos, historian and analyst, and out of Tehran, Mostafa Khoshesh, journalist and political commentator. Thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off with Marcus in London. In your perspective, I mean, why would former and current Western political officials even participate in a meeting sponsored by a group which has killed so many people?
That America and other Western countries, such as Britain, have a long history of supporting terror groups is a well-known and well-established actuality in international affairs, and I should also add a completely irrefutable actuality. However, what I find particularly alarming about America's increasing links to the terrorist organization MKO is the parallel which I can draw with America's links to another diabolical terrorist organization, namely the so-called Kosovo Liberation Army. Now, please allow me to explain the parallel. America long coveted Kosovo and Metochia, as America has coveted Iran since the Iranian Revolution of 1979. America once designated the KLA as a terrorist organization, as America also once designated MKO as a terrorist organization. However, American policymakers came to understand that in order to achieve America's objective of securing Kosovo and Metochia for itself and its other Western allies, the KLA could no longer be designated as a terrorist group, and therefore the KLA began its brutal campaign in Kosovo and Metochia. Now, the Americans, a number of years ago, took the decision to no longer designate MKO as a terrorist organization. We know what happened with the KLA. The KLA was free to advance its terror campaign in the Serbian province, which of course provided NATO with a pretext to bombard what was then the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. now that the Americans are increasing their links to MKO, indeed they have established a terrorist training base in Albania for MKO. Albania is, of course, a client state of America. My concern is that whilst I'm not saying that MKO will carry out a campaign in Iran as the KLA did in Kosovo and Metochia, undoubtedly MKO will at some point increase its terrorist attacks in Iran. And who is to say that that would not provide the Americans and other Western countries, most notably Britain, with a pretext to take some sort of action against Iran. Maybe not military action, but some sort of other action. So that is why...
All right, stay with me, Marcus. Concerned. Stay with me, Marcus. It's a very quick show. Let me get Mustafa in on this discussion. What about that, Mustafa? I mean, do you think that the MKO are really that effective to be able to make a difference inside of Iran, as Marcus has just said, or... even to try, it appears that they have tried everything that they could over the last 42 years and have not been successful. But how do you see it?
Hello, Marzia. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
You know, first of all, former and retired American officials would take part in such gatherings in return for huge sums, especially if they pay you from $20,000 to $120,000 in the case of Rudy Giuliani. And which, of course, and he was given a private flight and the best accommodation. But when it comes to the MKO, it's a complete different case because they are being used as an instrument. In two aspects, actually, they are being used. One is as an instrument to pressure Tehran. They were taken off the blacklist back in 2012. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and the Obama administration was preparing to maximize pressures for the impact of the cruel sanctions, or in the terms of Obama, he said crippling sanctions, in order to pressure Tehran into talks. Now, the same happened after Donald Trump and Bolton intended to maximize the pressures on Iran after the pullout from the JCPOA in 2018, and now the same is being done by the Biden administration because of the current conditions. There is not much hope about the Vienna talks. Both sides are trying to beat each other and receive more concessions for a revival of the nuclear deal. Also, Biden knows that Raisi is in office, and he would not agree to regional talks with the United States over Iran's regional power and missile power. So they intend to maximize pressures on Tehran. This is not the only case that the U.S. has been using terrorist groups as an instrument for imposing its will. As my colleague said, the other parallel is when the U.S. Supported the ISIS terrorist group. And also, let's remember that there has been, much confession by former and present U.S. officials, including Joe Biden himself, that they and their allies supported the creation of this ISIS terrorist group. And let's remember that the MKO, whatever they are called, these terrorists, oldies, the cult, they, trained not only ISIS, but especially the al-Nusra, another offshoot of the al-Qaeda in Syria, as well as Jaish al-Islam, another terrorist offshoot of al-Qaeda, which operated in East Ghouta of Damascus in the early years of the war, the militancy war in Syria. They trained them, and there are facts, and there have been facts that have been released on international media outlets about the training by the MKO.
So basically, Mustafa, what you're saying, let me just jump in here for a second. So basically what you're saying is that these Western governments, these Western regimes are basically, they're willing to use these terrorist groups just to get to their goal. In this case, perhaps the overthrow of the Islamic Republic. Is that what you're saying?
True, but using the MKO and many other terrorist groups, is done by the United States as not just for I mean, this instrumental use is not just aimed at increasing political pressures, but they've been a very, practical and very good tool in the hands of the United States for espionage, for assassination of the Iranian nuclear scientists, and even the Western media outlets have been acknowledging that the MKO has been running cooperation with the CIA and especially Mossad in order to do the assassination when it comes to Iran, especially in the case of Iranian nuclear scientists.
Okay, stay with me, Mustafa. I'm so sorry to interrupt you. So sorry. But let me get Marcus back in on this discussion. I mean, Marcus, when we look at the situation, obviously this is a group with lots of money. Now, we have various analysts pointing the fingers at Riyadh and Saudi Arabia as far as backing them. Your overall assessment of where this terrorist group is getting their financial support?
Well, Marcia, where would American foreign policy objectives, indeed where would British foreign policy objectives be without terror groups? Both Washington and London have long employed terrorist organizations to advance the goals of America and Britain in various parts of the world, from Bosnia to Libya to Syria, though of course in the latter case, namely Syria, the American objective was defeated. But nonetheless, without the support of America and Britain, both ISIS and Al-Qaeda could never have become the potent force in Syria that both groups managed to achieve. And the same with MKO. MKO has been groomed by the Americans and other Western countries for a number of years now, indeed for many decades now. They have not just been lavished with money, but also top American lobby groups, top American PR firms have created the image of the MKO as a democratic and peace-loving organization. One need only look at the footage of MKO conferences, both this year's one and in previous year's one, to see how it is very slick. The men, largely speaking, are well-groomed, and many of them are wearing suits, and indeed their female counterparts are also well-groomed. That is how the Americans and also the British in public project the terrorist leadership, the leadership of the numerous terrorist groups to the rest of the world, whom America and Britain are supporting. However, what you see at MKO conferences is just a facade. It is merely a cover, because the reality of MKO is that it is a violent, bloodthirsty terrorist organization which has been persecuting a savage war against the Iranian people, men, women, and children, for many, many years now.
Okay.
And my concern, as I said moments ago, is that MKO could grow into something more potent, far more potent than what it has been in previous years.
Well, Mustafa, I mean, when we look at the situation, as Marcus was saying, with their presentation and the way that we see the media showing them or their live coverage, very slick, very coordinated, and very much a Western-type setup when they're trying to promote certain groups. So with this being said, and we know the terrorist activities that the MEK has taken part in, and we do not see this organization being listed not by Europe or not by the United States on a terror list. So where does the United Nations play in all of this? Where does that come in? Does this actually delegitimize the United Nations itself for basically just turning a blind eye to this terrorist group? But at the same time, we have seen so many sanctions on so many other countries or entities, for example, like Iran, like Russia, like so many other places right now.
Yes, that's actually the case. So many Iranians are asking the legitimacy of the UN, as well as UN-related bodies, human rights bodies, as well as ICC and others, because they have always failed to bring justice to this terrorist cult. But let's remember that when the UN and its related bodies, they fail such expectations, then they leave no other choice for Iranians to, you know, go for some way to, you know, materialize their rights. What matters now is that because, as I said, Raisi is coming to office, now there is growing pressure from the West, from side of the Western countries, the Europeans, in order to pressure Tehran, including for human rights, and they have no better means apparently than supporting a terrorist group like MKO, claiming that they are on the run for human rights violations. That's been what they've been telling European people when they intended to relocate them from the Ashraf camp in Diyala, northern Iraq, to somewhere in Europe. All the world countries shunned the United States' request for, you know, accommodating this terrorist group and giving them a territory somewhere to erect their camp.
So that shows that they know. That shows that they know what type of group it is. But yet, and they continue to support it, right, Mostafa?
Of course, that's the case. Otherwise, why should have they been in the blacklist of the EU, the UK, and the United States up until 2012? They have the blood of even European and Americans on their hands. They have the blood of Iraqi Kurds and Shiites on their hands. It's not just the Iranian people. But when they told, you know, when they relocated them to Albania, they told Albanians, the people, that this is a political opposition of the Islamic Republic on the run because they are afraid of the Islamic Republic. But after they started operations in their camps and they appeared with guns in that camp on Albanian territory, and when they started money laundering and many, you know, bribery and extortion, and they started threatening journalists and senior journalists and news directors and media people in Albania, I know for sure at least a couple of senior Albanian news directors who are on the run from their country because they have been questioning the MKO operation on their lands.
Okay, and I'm so sorry, Mostafa, I'm so sorry, but I have only about a minute left. Marcus, what is it going to take when we have a situation like this that basically these Western regimes are not really paying attention to a terrorist group like this? So doesn't it basically say to independent countries that they must strengthen themselves? I mean, if might makes right in this world, and there is no, it seems, international political option in dealing with this, isn't it basically, for example, to a country like Iran or others, that you better be as strong as you can, because otherwise they will destroy you and try to make an excuse at any point to do that? Your take, Marcus.
Quite. I have long said that Iran is a source of inspiration for other countries around the world, especially countries in geostrategic parts of the world who are pursuing an independent foreign policy, because Iran has only managed to retain its independence and sovereignty by having built up a very strong economy, by having built up a very strong military, by having created a great extent of unity amongst the Iranian people, and by Iran having exceptionally closely guarded Iranian culture and Iran's religion. So other countries around the world, if they are to prevail in the face of American and British aggression, they should look to how Iran has managed to prevail since 1979.
All right, and on that note, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I have to end the program. Appreciate both of you being with us out of London, Dr. Marcus Papadopoulos, historian and analyst, and out of Tehran, Mostafa Khoshchesh, journalist and political commentator. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Very heart of evergreen forests. Under the starry sky of the desert. With the radiance of silver-colored sand. In the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Exhausted. Vacuuming the floor is a very hard job to do. Thank God my apartment is tiny. And now it's time for drinking a cup of fragrant Iranian tea. Drinking tea beats tiredness. And here's the tea. Let me place the cup in this small, beautiful copper tray. I bought this tray from Isfahan. And now I can take a rest on my rocking chair. Oh, terrible! I screwed up. I spilled the tea on this beautiful gleam. You know, this old gleam is a family inheritance. I have inherited from my mother's grandma. Oh, God. I have to ask my grandma about the way I could remove the tea stain from my gleam. Oh, by the way, I was about to forget to tell you something. Our today's destination is Kashan, to Van Village. During this trip, we're going to get familiar with making gleams. سلام مامان بزرگ، یه سوال ازتون داشتم. Gleam is a type of Iranian handicraft which covers floors or furnishes the interior of dwellings. Gleams are woven with the fibers of silk, sheep wool, goat hair, or even the wool of other domestic livestock. Long before gleams became decorative items in modern houses, traditionally, they were used for practical purposes such as floor coverings, hangings to protect from weather, or as a dress for pack animals. The colors used for dyeing the yarns of gleam are traditional herbal colors. The warp yarns are usually from livestock's wool. Sometimes, colored yarns are used for giving a beautiful sheen to gleam. The gleams of different regions of Iran are distinguishable by their patterns, designs, or the materials used for their production. Some types of Iran's gleams include Lori gleam, Harsin gleam, Baluch gleam, Khamse gleam, Anbaran gleam, and Turkmen gleam. I am now in Van village. This village is located 50 kilometers to the city of Kashan. Today I'm going to visit Haj Hassan Shabani's home. He's a skilled gleam weaver. He has gained a great fame for his gleams. I am now in the spectacular yard of the house of Haj Hassan Shabani. He is sitting at a loom, busy weaving a gleam. It's a beautiful gleam with vivid colors and eye-catching and captivating designs. Words fail me in describing the beauty of this gleam.
I have already woven 2 meters of the gleam. Now I have lifted up the loom's stick and most part of the gleam is weighted at the ends. Gleam weaving is a traditional old profession. Practicing this job and learning how to do it is no longer common among people. This is the weaving comb. You should not push it down rigorously. It should not make noise.
Gleam weaving has been gradually mechanized, like other handicraft industries, and just a few people produced handmade gleams. So, the handmade gleams are very precious, and we have to value this great old art. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Good morning!
From the heart of beautiful Iran, IRIB English Radio.